And yeah, the
go ahead.
go ahead.
Out there in music video land, welcome to another episode of the Music Video Land podcast, brought to you by your super good friends here at IMVDB, the Internet Music Video Database at imvdb.com. My name is Adam Fairholm, and with me, as I think you have a track record of 100%, Doug, is Doug Klinger from beautiful, glistening in New York City, New York. How are you doing, Doug?
Super good, Adam. No jackhammers presently outside my window, so doing super good. How are you?
Good. I heard that, you know, in New York they have, well, first of all, they have garbage on the street, which is all I always love. I love dodging piles of garbage. And then I also love, they have roving gangs of jackhammers, just to kind of shake things up a little bit. You know,
and it's not men with jackhammers. It's just somehow just jackhammers. There's no men with them. They just jackhammer along the road.
Well, I have no good, I have absolutely no good transition into talking about our interview for this week, because this
well,
week...
Well, there is a good transition because he's New York based.
That's right. Yeah. This week on the podcast, we have Mr. Rick Cordero, which is really exciting. We've been on to talk to him for a while. Rick is the director of one of our favorite music videos of 2012, The Symbol by Action Bronson, which you should just stop everything and take a look at right now. Love that music video. A really funny music video, as well as some other great music videos for artists like The Roots, for Busta Rhymes, Snoop Dogg, Wale. I think that's how you say his name. Brother Ali, who is a previous guest on the podcast. He directed the video for Good Lord, which I don't think we got into with Brother Ali, but it's a really interesting video nonetheless. One of the other interesting parts of this interview is Rick is the owner, operator, founder of 321 Media, which has a YouTube channel, and it's a very popular YouTube channel. They have around almost 65 million video views for the channel, and he has a YouTube channel, and we get to hear talk a lot about YouTube in the interview. And people who are savvy internet viewers may have noticed something in the last week or so happen with YouTube, and that is a little bit of a redesign, refinement. Have you noticed this, Doug?
I have noticed this, and I've also, is that what you're called, internet viewer?
I'm an internet viewer, yes.
Oh, okay. I didn't know. I thought it was a user, but that's fine. Viewer is cool too. We'll go with that.
And now YouTube is, you know, they've had roughly this, you know, they've had the same logo roughly. You know, they're one of those companies like, or sites like YouTube or Google, that they don't, you know, come up with something and then you don't recognize the site anymore. It's more incremental improvements. And, you know, they've had a few different redesigns. You may remember the phase of YouTube where they had a lot of, you know, like the gray with the you know, the noise instead of the flat colors. Anyway, so they came up with this, you know, redesign last week, maybe a week and a half ago, and there's something really interesting about it, because what they did, most of the, you know, reorganizing was done on the video page. And Doug, if you remember, think back 2 weeks ago when you visited a YouTube video, where do you see on the page, like, who made the video and where it comes from?
It would be pretty tiny, and it would be up at the top kind of right-hand corner.
That's right. And, you know, that is not really great screen real estate. Obviously, it's there, but it's not really up in front and center. And
it's definitely one of the lesser things that they're highlighting.
Exactly. And there was never any indication readily available of, you know, how popular that channel was. you know, there wasn't any number that you could just look at and kind of numerically kind of, you know, gauge it on a scale of its popularity. And now that's completely different.
And from the video page, you mean?
On the video page, right. So right now, when you look at a video, you have the name of the video, and then right underneath it, you have a little graphic, square graphic avatar of the account user channel that created that video, as well as a little subscribe button and, you know, one of those little things that come, you know, like a Twitter follow me button or like a Facebook like button where it has the number next to it indicating how many people have subscribed.
And they're also, I was going to say, they're also taking some of the accounts and they're trying to get you to tie it with your either your Google Plus account or associate it more with, like, they're essentially trying to make it a more social, more of a social network than it already is, or more clearly a social network. It's not like they're adding any more functionality to the site. They're just trying to highlight certain functionalities that are there.
Right. And so, no, so this is, you know, it may seem like a small change, you know, if you don't really pay attention to, you know, what's going on underneath a video. But I think this is really big for a few reasons. Number one, as we mentioned before, this was really wasn't anything that YouTube visually was telling you to pay attention to before. There really wasn't a relationship between you're watching a video and, oh, by the way, this video is coming from a certain entity. If you were paying attention, you could figure it out. But now it's very clear. Like, I'm looking at the YouTube page for Rihanna's Diamonds video, which is very popular right now. And right underneath it, it says, you know, very clearly this is coming from Rihanna's Vivo account, Rihanna Vivo.
And before, people used to have to, like, do things. They would, like, put those annotations in there, or, like, you'd see in a video people, like,
oh, you know, right, like, video, subscribe, like, click here and subscribe.
Like the 5 seconds at the beginning or end of the video. They'll put, like, a little Chiron up there, just like, subscribe to the page. Hey, for more cool videos like this and me scaring my girlfriend or whatever people do on YouTube. Here's a quick question for you, and this is just pure speculation. Do you think they're really trying to, like, for example, my personal YouTube channel is something that I used, like, back in college when I used to make, like, silly, stupid web videos. And so I didn't want to change it to Doug Klinger, you know, associated with my Google Plus account. I wanted to keep it under the name that it already had. And YouTube made me tell them why I didn't want to change it. They were like, why don't you want to associate it? Is it one of these reasons? And one of them was like, this is a channel that's not really me. It's a personality or character or show. So they are really trying to, like, get people to associate it with their Google Plus. Now, it might be to push Google Plus. It might be to make YouTube a more, you know, highlight the fact that it's more of a social network. But one thing it could also be doing is taking some of the anonymity away from YouTube comments, so people aren't quite so shitty.
YouTube comments are popularly known as kind of the cesspool of the internet.
And most of the reason why is because it can be completely anonymous. So if it's your actual face there next to it, and that's why. You know, Vimeo talks about, you know, the fact that they encourage you to use your real name on Vimeo, and they think that it makes their community more supportive and less trolly like that. And maybe this will have it. Maybe it wasn't an intended effect, but an unintended consequence of them getting people to associate themselves with their YouTube accounts will be less people saying homophobic and hateful things in their comments.
Now, one thing related to, well, let's bring it back to music videos a little bit, because obviously this is site-wide, this isn't just for music videos, but I think that one of the interesting things that has repercussions in the music video industry is that a lot of music videos are not released under a specific, you know, artist account. So a good example is Fun. Fun's music videos for their last album, which won them many Grammy nominations, I should say, was released under Fueled by Ramen, which is the, you know, YouTube account for the record label. So when you look at, you know, Fun, let me just pull it up, Fun Some Nights video on YouTube. You know, underneath it, it doesn't say, you know, Fun, subscribe to Fun on YouTube. It says subscribe to Fueled by Ramen. So, and this is something that is, you know, pretty common for music videos. A lot of them get released on Pitchfork TV or exclusively under, you know, their record labels, a YouTube account. So, and you know, before, like I mentioned, this didn't really matter that much. When you're watching the video, there wasn't really a specific call to action to interact with that entity in any way. So now when you're looking at, you know, the fun, you know, music video for Some Nights on YouTube, your call to action is to interact directly with the record label. So it'd be interesting going forward to see if maybe some of that activity is going to taper off a little bit. Maybe bands are going to look at this and say, we want that interaction piece to come directly to us on our YouTube account instead of funneling it through another entity.
Yeah, or at least an entity that represents them specifically. You know, a lot of times for other reasons, you also see, you know, a band maybe will premiere on Pitchfork because Pitchfork has that built-in audience already. There's people who are subscribed to Pitchfork already on YouTube and get their updates every day, despite what band is getting uploaded to their account. The same with maybe the record label or something like the Creators Project or Mocha TV, something like that. You know, they have a built-in audience on their own, and so music video, you know, record labels and stuff may want to premiere videos on them to kind of reach those built-in audiences. But I think from a band perspective, I think this could turn it, it could make Vivo seem more appealing, because I think Vivo will become the for the most part the YouTube equivalent of their official source for their content. And so you know, and I think that up and coming bands kind of strive for a Vivo account, to the point where you'll sometimes see fake Vivo accounts out there. It'll be some random band who isn't really associated with Vivo, doesn't actually have a Vivo account. Yeah, and then they'll just put, you know, Doug Klinger and the Rippers Vivo, and we were great for a while. So, you know, just put that Vivo account there to make themselves seem like they're cooler or more important, or they have that Vivo tie when they actually don't. So I think the Vivo accounts could possibly become the new, you know, it will enforce the fact that they're kind of the standard bearer there for YouTube music videos, despite the fact that their content partnership with YouTube has essentially expired already. But, you know, the fiscal cliff of the YouTube Vivo talks does have a little bit of an extension there. So I think that we're okay for a little bit, but I think that that's going to kind of reassert itself and become pretty.
Yeah, that's right. You know, the YouTube contract extension is 120 days, so we have until about March until that takes effect. We'll talk about that probably in another episode, but it's
more extensively. But yeah, I mean, music videos are never going to go away from YouTube. Put it that way. If you know, even right now, if a music video premieres, let's say not on YouTube, and it premieres, let's say on Rolling Stone or Perez Hilton or something like that, somebody's going to take that video and put it on YouTube the second it shows up on a different website. And although there are means to get it pulled down, and eventually it'll get pulled down, 10 other people are going to upload it first. Anyway, you're never going to get music videos off of YouTube. So Vivo would be silly to disassociate themselves.
And, you know, I have to hand it to Vivo, whoever made the decision early on in Vivo's run to have individual artist accounts. It could have been just a numbers thing, because Vivo has something like 50,000, 60,000 music videos. But they could have just made a Vivo content channel and just dumped everything on there. But they didn't. They made individual accounts, which I'm sure was much more of a logistical challenge than just having one account. Or maybe, you know, who knows, maybe it was easier. I'm not, don't pretend to know how YouTube works under the hood, but it's, you know, when YouTube moves like this, you know, the Vivo accounts are able to move with it. It doesn't break anything, really.
Yeah, it doesn't seem to. So,
Well, I wanted to bring up one more other small change that I thought was fun. It's not music video related, but hey, why not?
All right, hit us with it.
So, you know the likes and dislikes system. Unlike Facebook, where you can only like things, on YouTube, you can like and dislike them, which leads to, you know, some hilarious numbers, such as, you know, Rebecca Black Friday or a video like that, where there's a you know, 10% likes and 90% dislikes. And it used to be it was represented by a red line for dislikes and a green line for likes. And now there's only a green line, and the likes are represented by just a light gray, which is, again, one of those things that where if you're not paying attention, you may just, you know, miss it. But it is, I think, an important little visual thing that they've changed, because now out of the corner of your eye, if something has a large amount of dislikes, you can't, you know, kind of catch that with your eye through the Reddit. Even for a Rebecca Black Friday, which is a very tiny little sliver of green, it looks pretty innocent because the contrast isn't so apparent there. So an interesting change, I think.
Yeah, I think it's probably just because gray ink is cheaper than the red ink. Is that now how the internet works? I don't know.
It might at Google. There have been many a story at Google. I think there was a blog post by a designer who worked at Google and left, who was fed up with his job because Google would, you know, debate little things like, you know, where how many pixels wide something was based on, like, energy output and things like that. And Google is – oh, YouTube is owned by Google, so you never know. It is little bit more of a – the YouTube redesign, it does – kind of nicely fit into the whole Google's new UI toolkit, which, you know, before when it had the light gray, it really didn't. So I think you know Google's given YouTube a big old design hug.
Hey, those are cute. There's one more thing I think we should talk about before we kick it to the interview, and I think that is the Grammy Awards.
That's right, the Grammy Awards. There are so many things going on that we forgot to mention those because, those are coming up in February. There's going to be a lot happening in February, March of 2013.
Not until February, but even so, I think it's important to note who was nominated, particularly for the short-form music video category, because, as we all know, the long-form music video category is nonsense.
So we might as well just – there's only five nominations, so we might as well read them. We have Houdini by Foster the People, directed by Daniels, who are previous podcast guests. No Church in the Wild, Jay-Z by Jay-Z and Kanye West, directed by Romain Gavras. Bad Girls by MIA, also directed by Romain Gavras. So two nominations there. Nice. We Found Love, Rihanna featuring Calvin Harris, directed by Melina Matsoukas, which was the MTV Video Music Award Video of the Year for 2012. And then we have Run Boy Run by Woodkid, directed by Yoann Lemoyne, which who has directed a lot of some of my favorite videos from 2012, including Blue Jeans by Lana Del Rey, Born to Die by Lana Del Rey.
And sounds like you like a lot of Lana Del Rey stuff.
That's right. He's directed two of those videos, which I consider her best. So I like that. And Run Boy Run is also a great video as well.
Yeah, it is. And I think that you think that Roman would be the fave because he's got two in there, but I think that the fact that Rihanna got the VMA might be tilting the scale in her favor. I think I can speak for both of us when I say the IMDb vote goes to Houdini.
That's right. That's a fantastic video.
Definitely the best in our opinion from that list, but you know, we don't get a vote. So that was just a fake one that we put out there.
That's right. How do you get on the Grammy voting committee? Al Walzer is on the Grammy voting committee, but we are not. I think there's like 10,000 people that vote on this. But by the way, it's Romain Gavras, not Roman Gavras. But
hold on. Romain Gavras.
Hold for edit. I think that, like we said, we both really love Houdini by Foster the People, but I have a feeling that MIA Bad Girls is going to win. I think it's in other music, like the UK Music Video Awards, won Video of the Year. It's picked up a lot of other awards for various, not just directing categories, but technical categories, well-deserved. And I think that, I think it has enough of the mojo to edge out We Found Love.
Mm-hmm. I don't know about that. I just think that the Grammy it's a different beast. It's not the same. I mean, I think that those are a great five, and I think that those are. I think that it's come a long way, even in a year. I mean, you know, last year you had Weird Al nominated, which I love Weird Al more than anyone probably, and that's still a little off that he was nominated. And I personally don't agree the winner was, which was Adele Rolling in the Deep, is particularly that spectacular of a music video. I mean, it's a good music video, but it's not. I don't think it's at the level of any of the ones that are nominated this year, from my opinion.
I completely agree with that. I think that what we see when we see something like the Grammy nominations for, you know, Best Short Form Music Video is that this was a really solidly fantastic year for music videos. I mean, there's you look at this and, you know, we've been watching and taking a look at music videos all year, and we're going to have a year-end wrap-up podcast coming later on in December, but it's been a really incredible year. So it's really, you know, good, I think, for the industry to have, you know, the music video community as well, to have five really, really strong music videos up for the nomination.
And you're seeing that in other top 10 lists that are out there, and we're not going to link to those because ours is the quintessential one, and none of those other ones matter that exist in the world. But you are seeing in general, when you compare this year's kind of crop of top 10s list to the last year's crop of top 10s list, that this year it's about the video. I mean, last year it was all, you know, they weren't bad videos, but it was all your Adeles and Beyoncés and just big name artists for the most part that you saw in a lot of these lists that came from these major music websites. And this year it really does seem to be about the music video. That's just what it seems, more so than it has. There seems to be a little bit of a shift where they're really paying attention to the video, regardless of who the video is coming from.
There we go. Well, that is going to be coming up in February, and that'll be exciting. That obviously, this is not one of the awards they announced during the actual show, so we will know. I can't remember if they do the other awards before or after the Grammys. I know at the Oscars, I think they do it before. But anyway, we'll find out in February. We'll obviously be covering that, but
and we'll tell you guys about it.
We'll tell you, right? You know, just give us a call. We'll publish our phone numbers. Call us on our cell phones. And say
976 music video.
But that is coming out in February. But you know what is coming out right this very second next is our interview with Mr. Rick Cordero, music video director of, like I mentioned at the top of this podcast, The Symbol by Action Bronson. Go to imvdb.com/podcast. You'll find the episode and you'll find a link to the video. Check it out. It is an amazing video. Also, you'll find a link to Rick Cordero's page on IMVDB, and you'll see his director history, and you'll see a lot of really amazing artists, really fantastic videos, such as, you know, The Roots, Busta Rhymes, etc.
Slaughterhouse
as well, that's right. And we also get into the YouTube channel, 321 Media. There's also a link to that as well. And you can add, you know, a few more to their 65 million video views. So without further ado, here's our interview with music video director Rick Cordero.
What's up? My name is Rick Cordero, and I am an independent filmmaker based in New York City, and I specialize in music videos.
And I've seen it. You describe yourself in a few places as a professional confidence dispenser, and I'm really interested to know what that means. Does it have anything at all to do with your music video work?
Yeah. Of course. A professional confidence dispenser is, I guess it's just kind of my, you know, my fancy way of saying director, which is, for me, my job is always to instill confidence in the people that I work with, whether it's the talent or the crew. It's really my job to kind of, create the atmosphere where artists can create and where technicians can create and make a, you know, engaging product. So that's sort of just like, you know, specifically describing exactly what I do, you know, and just kind of like, and I think it's kind of funny, you know, people kind of, well, what is that? You know, what does it mean? So, you know, perhaps it makes people search more about me or whatever, but.
We know. Feel like we have more confidence.
Do you think that applies to your role both at, you know, as a director and your role kind of at, you know, in a more management sense at 321 Media?
Yeah, totally. You know, as a director, I'm kind of you know, I work for my own company, but I also work for other companies, or I'm freelance or whatever. But for 321, we have other directors, you know, other aspiring directors and producers. And so, you know, these guys are, they're really good and, you know, and a lot younger than me. And I guess I've just kind of helped them to, you know, just discover what they're passionate about and, you know, help them find their own way. That's pretty much what I do. And so far it's been working, I think. But yeah, we have a lot of good people and a lot of creative energy when everyone's in the same room. So,
and you guys work in a lot of different, you know, visual formats, I guess you'd call them, you know, short films, feature length. And where did music videos come into that equation? Was that one of the first things you guys started working on, or you started working on, or did they kind of fit in later?
Yeah, well, for me, my first project was actually like an indie feature film in like 2005. And I didn't really have any film school experience. A lot of it I just kind of got from friends and coworkers. I actually went to school for graphic design. So it was just something that I was really interested in. And after I did that feature, which was really, really very educational for me. You know, I made a lot of mistakes and whatever. But I still wanted to keep going, you know, and I found it was just like the feature just left me really exhausted and kind of depressed. But I still wanted to, you know, to capture that feeling, you know, when you're on set. So I kind of gravitated to music videos. It was sort of, you know, it's like a temporary fix for me. And I was shooting a lot of actually like indie bands and a lot of rock stuff that was happening in the city at that time around 2006. And so I was doing a lot of that. And I really didn't have a platform for it because, well, YouTube had just come up. And when, you know, I started to upload onto YouTube, it just became like even more addicting. Like it was just like, I just want to keep filling this YouTube site with my work, and that's kind of how I just started shooting a lot of music videos.
And you guys are up to on that channel like over 62 million views, I think, as of now.
Hold on, let me check that. That's 64 million.
Oh wow, nice.
Yeah, it's about a million every 3 or 4 weeks.
And do you guys keep track of would you say music videos are among the most, because I know on YouTube in general, I mean, the big news this week was Gangnam Style surpassing Justin Bieber's Baby and like the biggest YouTube video of all time. Are the biggest videos on, you know, your channel the music videos?
Yes, yeah, totally. You know, that's sort of the nature of YouTube, you know. It's very celebrity and artist oriented. So, so a lot of our big videos are music videos, and I think we just try to supplement it with, you know, the documentary stuff, the interview stuff, the short film stuff. You know, we do the short films because we love making them, you know, and not necessarily, to get, you know, millions of views off of them. But I think, you know, whenever you do a short film or narrative, it's just, It you know, it's your own project as a director. It's like your voice, you know, and it's everything you want to do as a filmmaker, everything you want to say, as opposed to, you know, having it be a collaboration with an artist where you're kind of trying to, you know, be the sounding board, you know, so to speak, for you know, their vision. So that's yeah, so we try to balance it out, but music videos are definitely the main thing that we do.
And you mentioned that you get about 1 million views every 3 weeks, which seems to be a pretty consistent kind of number. Do you find that you, with numbers so consistent, have like a more of a built-in audience specifically for 321 Media versus, you know, people watching music videos just because they're a fan of the artist?
We're starting to build out, you know, the brand on YouTube a little bit more. So I think for a while it was a little bit confusing for the audience. And, you know, that's why our subscribers number is kind of low. It's really kind of disproportionate from our channel views. But over the last few weeks, I've actually been talking with some of the strategy guys at YouTube, and they really helped me, you know, to make the channel a little bit better. You know, like having annotations that lead to the music playlists. You know, because a lot of the people that are viewing these videos are watching it, you know, specifically searching for the artists, or if it's on a watch page. But after that, I didn't really have a call to action, like, you know, click here for more 321 music videos. So now that I've been doing that, we've been seeing sort of an increase in the subscribers and video views. But and I think that's what's going to help, you know, a lot of, you know, connect the dots with, you know, say people who want to see my Nas video, and then, you know, and then they stumble upon like a Waka Flocka or something, you know, like it kind of just connects the dots, and hopefully people understand that, you know, we're the guys that did it, and we did it, you know, for the quality, and, you know, and we really were passionate about it, and, you know, so that's my hope, and I think it's been working.
You mentioned YouTube helped you out with getting some annotations and stuff. Did you have to reach out to them, or was that through the partnership that you guys have with them that they provide that information to you? How did that work out?
Yeah, we got the partnership pretty early on, when, like, around 2007. And I think I had done this trailer for Jay-Z, Blue Magic trailer. And it got, like, a ton of views. And then somebody, you know, on the partnership side reached out to me, and we got the partnership. And then it was, like, another year or so where it actually got activated. And then another year where, you know, you were able to monetize, and kind of, you know, the ads started getting better. So then they reached out to me because I guess they've just been, you know, they've been looking at different channels, and I guess it was recommended to someone. I don't know how they found it, but it's like after you get past a certain amount of views, they kind of like want to help you, and, you know, and they want to tell you, you know, it's just really good advice. You know, it's not like you'll make a ton of money doing this, even though, you know, there's potential, but it's really about, you know, building your channel. You know what I mean? It's really about like connecting with your audience, you know, commenting, you know what I mean? Responding to people who have good comments, and they, you know, with their new dashboard and, you know, the new branding stuff that they have, you can like put your logo on the upper right side, you know, transparent. I think they've really been helping out, you know, a lot of channels like myself, where, you know, it's just guys who really love doing this, you know, and it's not so much like we're trying to make stuff that's on TV, you know, we're just trying to engage an audience, and we're doing it because we love the artists and whatnot. So, and, you know, in the news recently, actually, I think, you know, remember all that money that YouTube gave to all those channels? They spent like $40 million or something like that, like last year, mm-hmm. All that money. And they're not renewing some of those channels. Like, I think like 40% of like the financing, they're not renewing because those channels weren't performing. And I think the disconnect was that those channels were trying to be like television, you know, and it's really not what it's about right now. And it's about engaging and mobilizing your audience. And the more you try to make it real fancy and, you know, and like trying to make it all glossy, and then you spend all the money, and it's like, what happened? You know, well, you didn't connect the dots. You know, why are these people on your channel? Do they know who you are? Well, you know, what you're about. And so, so I learned a lot from YouTube. You know, I talk to these guys weekly, and they're really, you know, it's really the future right now. So I'm just embracing it, and I'm lucky and grateful that I hopped on board really early on.
And I'm wondering what the, I guess, the economics of a YouTube channel is, because you mentioned, you know, other channels may be, you know, kind of jumping the gun by pouring too much money into production, if I'm understanding you right, and then making it look too, you know, too much like TV. And
yeah.
I noticed, you know, you have like a feature film, Starla, on there, you know, 90 minutes, and you can, I love that you can download the soundtrack for free in a zip off of Dropbox. Yeah. It's awesome. And I'm wondering, when you're working with something that, you know, as long as a feature film, what is the, how does that fit into the economics of, you know, running a channel? Is it more for name recognition plus the, you know, the revenue it generates, or is it more just for the revenue?
I mean, it definitely wasn't the revenue, you know, it's nowhere near, it has like hardly any views, you know, but, for me, it was a year of trying to submit it to festivals, you know, and we did a couple of screenings in New York, and the feedback was really phenomenal. I was really happy with it. You know, we didn't spend a lot of money, but everyone put their heart and soul into it. It came out really cool. I enjoyed it, you know. But I think just the festival route, like anything, you know, like just how the economy is with video content, it just wasn't there. There were no stars. You know what I mean? There was nothing that this movie would do for a festival. So with that said, you know, I was like, what am I going to do with this? Just hold on to it for another year? You know, like, is that right? Let me just put it online. Let me put my movie online. You know, people can share it. Maybe someday somebody will find it. Every now and then someone stumbles across it and likes it. But yeah, it was totally not for the revenue, for sure. And I spent a lot of money on my own money making it. But it was just like I said, one of these things where you just, you know, if you're a director and you really, you know, are addicted to directing, you do it because you just, this is what you do and you can't do anything else. You know, you make a feature, you know what I mean? Put your own money up, you put your money where your mouth is. And like, and that's what I did. And, you know, it kind of like, you know, financially, probably not the smartest thing, but you know, I had to do it. And I think it really reflects on the music videos, you know, the commercial work and the stuff that I get paid to do. Like, I think it reflects something positive on it, because it's like, you know, it's like going, it's like traveling to the Mecca, you know, you put yourself through this, you know, this really difficult journey, you know, and you sacrifice your body, and like, and then if you can survive it, you know, everything else, you know, is like a walk to around the corner, you know. And
yeah, one day music video shoot doesn't seem so bad.
Yeah, well, yeah, you know, you put it in perspective. For me, it's really, you know, doing everything beforehand to make sure that it's a good experience, you know, because it's so easy to for a music video especially to be a really tense and uncomfortable environment. But I've like gotten really good at, you know, doing everything for it to be a comfortable experience. And then that just naturally makes the video good, you know, when everything is cool. So.
And could you share some of those secrets of making it a comfortable experience? Because we've heard many, many a tale of uncomfortable music video set. Is there anything in particular that you think really works?
Well, first of all, I tend to use the same people, you know, like the same cinematographer, the same AD, you know, just the guys who I know, you know, who I've who are battle tested, you know, like nothing like phases them. And, you know, you kind of have to balance that out with what you think the worst case scenarios with that the artist can do. Cause that's really like on my end, I kind of know what I'm going to get, you know, like I do a lot of the pre-pro work on my own, so a lot of my shot lists and everything is super organized, you know, that I really, you know, and I use the same people. So it's like, I know on my end, it's going to be good. artists that I worked with before. I understand their temperaments, what they like, what they don't like, how to keep them moving, how to keep them motivated. And, you know, it's a mental checklist that I go through that, okay, I remember this guy does that, you know, like let's, or he likes something a certain way, or, you know, and, you know, it's a lot of psychological, like, trickery almost. And,
you mind know, games.
Yeah, mind games, right. And then, and then, you know, then you get like some artists that, you know, that you can direct like one-on-one in a really, you know, in a small capacity. And then maybe if you put them in a bigger set, maybe there's more money and, you know, and you have to put a crew around them, that maybe it's a little bit weird, because on one hand you have your crew who's treating it like, you know, like a job, you know, like, and this is how we do it, and this is how a client should act, and this is how, you know. And then the artist is more like, well, I'm spending the money, and I'm going to do whatever I want to do, you know, like, and so, you know, I'm stuck in the middle there. So I have to kind of like, you know, it's a lot about compromising, you know, with each side. And in the middle of all that compromising, I'm sort of, pulling my vision together.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So, so I have a vision, I have, you know, I have it on the treatment, and I know what it's going to be, but it's going to change if those things happen, if there's, you know, this weird tension. So I have to kind of make it good and make everyone happy, and, you know, it's keeping everyone busy. That's really my best advice, is just like, if someone is just sitting around, or if there's ever any downtime, the food is late, if something breaks, you know, and like we have to get a new piece of equipment, like that's the only time where it's like, oh shit, you know, like what do I do? But yeah, as long as everyone's busy, like it's, and you know what you're doing, or if you don't know what you're doing, you kind of make people believe that you know what you're doing, then
that's the confidence dispensing right there.
Yeah, it's confidence dispensing, exactly.
Shifting gears a bit to some of the specific music video work you've done, one of our favorite videos of the year is Action Bronson, The Symbol. We just really, it's awesome and hilarious. We really love kind of how that video came together. And I'm curious what was behind kind of pairing Blaxploitation parody, you know, with Action Bronson.
It was something he, you know, we worked together before on a couple of videos. So we had we have a good like relationship where we just kind of bounce ideas off each other. And he kind of called me out of the blue, and he was just like, I have this song with Alchemist, I'm gonna send it to you. I said, all right, cool, I'll write something to it. He was like, oh, and I want it to be like a Blaxploitation trailer. And I said, okay, you know, Alchemist, Blaxploitation, all right, this makes total sense right now. So he sent me that, and then he sent me the artwork, which I don't know if you've seen the artwork for the single, but it's like he's wearing like this wolf's head. It's like, and there's all this crazy stuff. It looks like a poster.
Is this the same cover as like the Rare Chandeliers?
Yeah, it's something like that. But yeah, it's in the same vein as nice. That. You know? So I was like, okay, you know, this is gonna be easy. you know, with Action, he's very, you know, he's very detail oriented. You know, he won't give much direction on what he wants, but he loves it to be really fleshed out and like really like, you know, multiple pages of like, you know, details and descriptions, and I was really excited about it. So, you know, I wrote this, must have been like 7 pages. I don't know. It was a lot of pages, but it was a lot of like, it was almost like a short film script, you know, like I wrote it like with act one, act two, act three, only because I wanted it to feel like an actual storyline that we were shooting, and not just, you know, like a fan trailer. Like, have you ever seen one of those, like, you know, Superman or Batman fan trailers where it's cool scenes, but like they don't really make any sense, you know?
Right, right.
I guess The Symbol is kind of like that too, but there's actually a storyline behind it. I guess it was just for me and maybe for the actors to know that we were, you know, part of potentially going to do something a lot bigger than just a bunch of vignettes. So, so that's how that happened.
Is that potential still there?
Yeah. You know, we're trying to find funding. We wrote sort of a longer script, and I think we have like riffraff is written in there. It's really the violence is a little more extreme, and so we're gonna need some money for some of the stunts that we do. Like, but
we have like $20 to $30 to give you. It's not much, but we want to see Riff Raff and Action Bronson in a black exploitation film. So yeah, we got like $20 to $30 for that. So
I'll tell you what, if it comes to like us having to do a Kickstarter, then you know I'll send you guys a link, and you know.
We're in. I just had a garage sale, so we got plenty of ones.
We would definitely promote that. And I hope you guys save the wig, though. Because I saw in the behind the scenes, it's kind of a were you involved in that decision for the wig at all? Because it's one of my favorite elements of that video.
Yeah. Well, here's what happened with the wig. I bought a really expensive red-haired wig, which you see it behind the scenes. That thing was like $70 at the Halloween store in New York City, and you know, non-refundable because so you can't refund it. And I was like, oh, this is the perfect wig. Like, it's almost like human hair. Like, he's gonna love this. And then, you know, as you saw, you know, he was like, I want the other wig. And the other wig, the blonde wig, was actually the wig that one of the actresses brought. The actress, Silvana, who played the hooker. She brought that, you know, just like as part of her personal wardrobe. And he was like, I want that one. You know, and it was like, it's a nice wig, but it wasn't as expensive as my wig. And it was one of those things where I was like, you know, damn, that sucks. You know, like in my head, I'm like, well, that really sucks, but you know, whatever. Let's try it. And then if this is gonna make this guy happy for the rest of the day, then whatever. You know, that's how he has a blonde wig. You know, but it's, you know, I try to provide options. You know, like I try to provide a lot of options for him because he's not gonna come to a fitting. You know, he's not gonna, you know what I mean, like, can you approve this, please? Like, he's too busy. You know, he's.
Yeah, getting into a fight over a wig at the beginning of a day is probably not on the list of things to keep things not tense on a set.
There was a lot of stuff that happened that day, but yeah, the wig was not a big deal.
The other video that we wanted to ask about is, and I don't even know, this is part of Na's master plan, is to make people on podcasts like us say words so there'd be a nigger too video.
Right.
Actually, Doug, you had a question. That was your question, right?
I guess I was just kind of curious with that song and that video when working with Nas, what his kind of direction for that video was. He, you know, he obviously had a you know, a large purpose around that song and that album at that time. What kind of direction was did he give you for that video?
He didn't give me any direction. You know, I heard the song, and I envisioned like Spike Lee's 25th Hour montage with Ed Norton, and he's just like, you know, just like insulting everybody in New York, and you know, and it's like this real faces, and you know, just how Spike Lee does it, and I was really inspired by that. So I remember the first time we met, you know, I kind of had just this rough sketch of the shot list and things that, you know, I imagined we'd be seeing. And he was with it. And then, you know, I shot a lot of that stuff in New York and he was in LA. So I shot a lot of the narrative stuff before we actually shot his scenes. And then, when we shot his scene, his performance scene, I still didn't think he understood what I shot yet. So I, you know what I mean? Like, he wasn't on set for what I was shooting beforehand. So I was just like, does he really know, like, what I'm doing right now, like with like how I want to push this video. And so then after we shot it, it was really cool, you know, and he was happy. I popped my laptop open and I showed him some of the footage, and he was, you know, his jaw dropped and he was like, whoa, like, you know, you did all this? Like, when did you do this? Like, did they pay you? And I was like, no, they didn't pay me yet. And he was like, so you just went out and shot all this stuff just on your own? I said, well, not on my own. I had, you know, my crew with me, but yeah, we shot this stuff, you know, it's you, you know. It's like, oh, thanks, man. You know, that's, I appreciate that. And like, and so, so after the video was done, they did a screening in New York City. Like Def Jam did this whole screening because I don't think the song was actually on the album. I think they just like, they were trying to put it, but I think they cut it out. So it was just something like to promote the album. You know, it wasn't like, this is the single on the radio or anything, but they did this really nice screening at the I think the Solo House or Tribeca Grand. So it was at Tribeca Grand. It was really like fancy screening spot, and they had all these bloggers and stuff, and you know, and we talked about it, and you know, and Nas said a lot of kind words, and you know, I essentially told everyone that you know, the genius of this song and this video is that essentially Nas offends no one by offending everyone. And that's pretty much how, you know, what he's so great at, what not a lot of people can do. And that's what I really loved about working with him, you know. And yeah, I was a big fan from him before, but after that it was just like, dude, like, you totally know how to, you know, how to like get people talking and, you know, and incite them to discussion while at the same time being a really, you know, intelligent and good person. And so yeah, that was a cool video. That was fun.
And where did those vignettes come from? Because some of them, you know, must have taken a lot of prep, like the historical, you know, scenes and things like that. Where did, how did you kind of filter the final list into this is what you're going to shoot?
Well, what's funny is we shot a lot of the stuff very close to where my office was at the time. It's super busy, like, you know, park in Midtown, but there's this little area with like dirt on the ground, and like, so that's where I did some of the Islam stuff, like the Islam, like doing the prayer. Like, I did that in the middle of the city, you know, and like was like, what the fuck is that, like, you know. And I did the slave and the hanging scenes. I did that in Astoria Park in Queens, and again, like, people were like, what the fuck is this, like, you know. Cops, like, what's going on? You know what I mean? And it was like, it was a really small shoot. Like, it wasn't like they gave us a big budget. Like, all the budget went to shooting Nas in LA, you know. Like, it was just, you know, we had to have the right stuff, but everything in New York, we kind of, it was just running gun. And so, you know, when you say Nas, people will want to be involved. And so a lot of people just, you know, did some favors, and, but yeah, we didn't really have to go far, actually.
Another thing I wanted to ask you about, which is kind of, at the other end of the spectrum, when it comes to kind of content and videos, is the Thanksgiving Day reply that you did with D Pride. And I'm kind of curious just kind of what the, you know, the, like where the idea for that came from. Was that something that like YouTube kind of recommended that you guys did, that like a reply style video, or is that something that you guys came up with?
It was definitely something, it wasn't specifically that video, but my contact at YouTube did, you know, mention different kind of, just different kind of content, different shows, you know, to do to keep active. And one of the things he mentioned was doing a trending video, which is, you know, talk about a trending video and just comment on it. And I thought, well, me doing that by myself is kind of boring. And I guess, you know, I just don't want to do any video, like, you know, Gangnam is just like too big already, you know. Like, so I was just like trying to think of what video to do, and I remember playing the Thanksgiving video in our office, and we share the office with DeepRide. So, he was just like, "What is that?" And I said, "Oh, you never seen this before?" And we watched it, and I thought it would be kind of a cool video to do and give some commentary on. And it was just like, we spent one day and we just like made sort of a list of what to talk about, the song, the concept, the video quality, just and the bottom line, what we felt about it. So we had a plan going into it, and we just shot it, and actually the directors of that video, Ian Hodgkins and Chris Lowe, they reached out to me, and they were super cool. They were like, thanks for commenting on the video. I think you totally got what we were doing. We shot this video, just me and Chris, and we have our own equipment, and when we shoot in real locations, because a lot of times these budgets are very, very small, and we had a nice back and forth over email. I think it was important for me, with the video, not to knock it, but to actually say what we liked about it. And I think that's really what, the show that me and DeepRide are trying to do. We're trying to single out these videos, but really, keep it positive, keep it like, it was the spirit of independent filmmaking, spirit of doing, taking whatever you got and making something that people can watch, and not hit the close button, and like give props to anybody who could pull that off. And those guys, are killing it right now, killing it, killing it, killing it, killing it. And they're so humble and super nice. And next time I'm in LA, I'm supposed to link up with them. But yeah, shout out to Ian and Chris.
And the universe thank we and we thank you especially for doing that video instead of Gangnam Style. Because every day it's like there's like a torrent of Gangnam Style related news. It's hard to keep up with.
Yeah, and it's also important for me to keep it in the perspective of like DIY filmmaker, like this is what we're singling out. And DeepRide, not a lot of people know, like he's actually a really intelligent filmmaker. He really makes, his videos how in a way that strides the line between, super amateur and super professional, like he can do all that. He chooses to create videos that are very much connected to his audience, that his audience can watch and be like, "Wow, this is how I would shoot it." That's a brilliant thing, and that's why I love YouTube. I'm just totally like, you find these things and you can just like speak about them and get an audience, so.
I'm disappointed that the news media is not or did not cover the music video or the YouTube Vivo music video cliff as much as the current fiscal cliff.
By the actual, yeah, because in our world, the real physical cliff is it's
I live in a hilly area, but no cliffs.
to you Vivo, to YouTube Vivo, yeah, man,
Can you
it's
imagine a world without video music videos on YouTube?
well, it's like I said before, that's not going to be the case. I mean, you won't have it from an official source, but like 305media.com is going to be all over, and that's a place I made up if you didn't catch that, is going to be all over just ripping the embeds from somewhere and posting them on YouTube and getting that sweet, sweet YouTube ad money for the 3 days that they allow that video to stay up there until they pull it down. So, and then they just keep doing that over and over again. I know the game. I know the game.
Now, if they would, if they move, let's say there was a catastrophe, if there was a diplomatic meltdown in the negotiations here, they've mentioned other possible people. They were kind of, you know, strutting around saying, "Oh, we'll go wherever, you know, we got all sorts of people we can talk to take this music video content elsewhere." And I don't know, the only one I can see really is Yahoo Video.
I think they could go to Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
I think Facebook's in the acquiring people business.
Now Facebook to me is now YouTube is like a site of record, and what I mean by that, it is not like a site that, you know, changes too much with the passing of time. Right, there's always new videos and things like that, and the homepage always changes, but you know, you have it's URL based, right? When you share a video and you kind of pass it around, you're sharing an actual URL. There's really, except for pages and profiles, there's not a lot of that going on with Facebook. It's a very kind of transient kind of
form. But another point to be made is that the artists and the labels have a presence on Facebook already. So it wouldn't be quite a major shift. I mean, they don't have there's no Rihanna page on Yahoo Video right now, but she's got a fan page, and that fan page got a huge audience already. So
that's true.
That's something that is in Facebook's favor. And they've got a built-in audience in general, even if it's not dedicated just to Rihanna. That's a huge bargaining chip that, you know, Yahoo Media's not, you know, or Yahoo Videos doesn't have.
Now the other question of just basic infrastructure, because you know Gangnam Style is close to 1 billion views on YouTube, and that is a lot of bandwidth.
Yeah.
And that, you know, 17 of the top 20 music videos on YouTube of all time are music videos. So whoever takes this on has got to be able to live up to the task. I know Facebook is obviously very successful in, you know, serving up images and you know, getting really fast page load speeds, and you know, they know what they're doing in that form. But YouTube just does that. They just do video. They have spent, you know, the better part of a decade figuring out how to do that and how to do it well. And you know, for Facebook, it is it's not a core competency, I don't think. And I might be just speaking out of my ass, but, you know, there's not a lot of... Every time I watch a video on Facebook, like, almost literally every time, it's a YouTube embed or a Vimeo embed.
Yeah, or it looks like shit. So
there's the third option.
Right. Yeah, that's true. I mean, it's not going to happen, because another point is they're not going to take everyone. It's kind of the point we're making. I keep making. They're not going to take everybody. They'd be leaving viewers on the table as well, no matter where they went, I think.
Well, so I know what we're not going to leave on the table is picks of the week. Or are we going to leave that on the table?
We won't leave. We are going to leave that on the table. No, we shouldn't. What do you got for this week?
Oh, for this week, I have a music video that I've watched a few times because it's just interesting for several reasons music video, and that is Skylar Grey, "Come On, Let Me Ride," featuring Doug, your favorite artist of all time. You're Paul McCartney, Eminem.
It's not true, but it's also not true. That's a weird thing for you to have said. Like, it's not like I love him. Whatever, keep going.
Well, Skylar Grey, if you don't know who she is, you're probably in the majority. She used to be known as Holly Brooke and, you know, released some things. But she has, you know, made a name for herself mostly for co-writing Love the Way You Lie by Eminem and Rihanna, which was a fairly large hit, I might say.
She's also sung a whole bunch of hooks on a whole bunch of rap songs. I think she's pretty well known.
I mean, I didn't know who she was. I mean, if you know who background singers are in rap songs, then you know who she is. But anyway.
But it's not like featuring. She's had an album. I keep going again.
All right. Okay. So it's not like this person came out of nowhere, but you may not know who she is. And anyway, this music video features. It's called, you know, "Come On, Let Me Ride," and for some reason the title doesn't have bicycle, but it's like the main thing they're talking about in the entire video. And you know, they're in sort of like a trailer park. Rural area, and there's a little bit of a narrative with this, you know, Skylar Grey having a little bit of a rivalry with these three young ladies who are in bikinis, and I'm not really sure what's going on, but she performs questionable plastic surgery on these. Anyway, hold on 1 second. I'm not going to describe this video.
Wait, but her boyfriend is looking at magazines with them in them, and that's why she doesn't like them.
Now, this video is directed by Isaac Rentz, who you may, if you're a long, long time listener of this podcast, he was a guest on our podcast in the previous episode, and he does a really fantastic job. And one of my favorite things about this video is they do a really good job of incorporating Eminem. Eminem, it wasn't just like called to like come and rap on this. You know, she has a relationship with him, and you know, he's kind of a little bit of a collaborator in this. So, you know, she even describes this video as a collaboration between her, Isaac Rentz, and Eminem. They're all kind of involved in this. And Eminem, you know, usually sometimes when there's a featured artist, they'll just like film them another time, but he's there, he's kind of taking part in the video, and there's this great scene where he is on a bicycle trying to pull this platform of like two overweight ladies in like a kiddie pool with foam and things like that. And it's just a, you know, Eminem, I think, as far as rappers go, does kind of self-deprecating humor the best, and I always like when he does it in music videos, because he has a tendency to do those things, like, you know, in the Not Afraid video, that are just so grandiose, like flying around, that it's good to see him back in that form in the music video world. And also, Skylar Grey is really, really good in the video. She kind of matches him for his on-screen persona. So, really great, interesting video, and directed by Isaac Rentz. And there will be an upcoming video chats about this as well.
There will be indeed. And if you want to know a little bit more about Isaac's work in general, there's a video chat that came out about a video that he directed today for Tegan and Sarah. So go check that out too if you enjoy the work of one Isaac Rentz.
That is Closer by Tegan and Sarah, one of my previous picks. And yeah, no, Isaac's great.
Yeah, as is the Come On Let Me Ride music video, shot in a trailer park in Detroit. So very authentic as well.
And are there any, you just did this interview before we got on the call, so any interesting things about this video you can share with us now?
There are a lot of interesting things about this video, but there are a whole bunch of interesting things about this video. I don't want to give too much of it away, but I will tease it. It's a really interesting interview to read, though, so check that out for sure when it drops.
And so, Doug, what are you?
Oh, right, that's right. It's my turn to do the long talking.
Wasn't mine that long?
No, I'm just saying that, like, we each have a 2 minute monologue at the end of every episode, which is great. My 2 minute monologue is by a man named John Travolta and a lady named Olivia Newton-John. Mm. The song is called I Think You Might Like It. You may know John Travolta and Olivia Newton-John when they were in the peaks of their careers in the film Grease. Whatever the opposite of the peak of your career is, the point in which John Travolta and Olivia Newton-John are in right now. I wouldn't say Twilight because that implies good, and this video is not that. I believe it's for charity, so it's tough to dump on it too much, but we're gonna anyway. And because I honestly don't know what the hell they're doing. Adam talked about my blog post series, so I'm gonna talk about his. He included this in one of his weekly wrap-ups from 2 weeks ago, and I'm gonna kind of echo his sentiments, or the sentiments of the YouTube comment that Adam quoted. That this is kind of like the mind-blowingly bad video. They both seem very old. There's like a minute long portion of the video where all they're doing is running towards each other. and it's in like not even an attractive area. They're in some kind of breezeway at like an elementary school or something stupid. And then the best part is John Travolta has some kind. On the way to the set, a Sharpie exploded into John Travolta's chin and covered it. And he just said, you know what, this looks kind of like a goatee, so I'm going to roll with this. And because whatever that is, it covers just an inch and a half of his chin is all that's covered. It looks like it should be a mustache, but it's on his chin, and it's awful. And So for those reasons, check it out. And if this is associated to a charity, go ahead and donate to that charity. But what's going on here? Who knows? But it's my pick of the week, Doug Klinger pick of the week. Olivia Newton-John, John Travolta. I think you might like it.
And we should read the YouTube comment here. It's by user Cracksang. Like, you can see why YouTube wants
use actually. No, that's that guy's real name.
The quote is, "Holy fucking shit, I am literally speechless. Is this for fucking real? My mind cannot comprehend this, like, at all. Fuck." And that, I think, is that's a really... It encompasses just what I felt about the video in general. So, there we go.
Yeah, mine too. And, so yeah, this is a great episode. I'm really proud of us for this episode.
Oh my god, we're so good.
I thought so. I thought you had some great questions. Your pick of the week was great. I love that video. Your intro was good. The way you kicked it to the interview, your transitions, all of it was really strong.
And your mic was it was really clear, and I couldn't hear any background noise.
No fuzz, no muzz. Okay, good. Yeah, that was good. Go ahead and post this.
That was better than the first one.